Good morning, folks. Wednesday, July 9, making our way through July. It has been some hot, folks. I don't know about you. I mean, I've had to cut grass half one day, half the other. No way it was able to finish. The rain, the heat, the this, the that. It's always something. Looks like we're going to have a couple of more weeks of this hot, hot weather. Hopefully it cools off just a little bit. We keep our fingers crossed. Got a great lineup for you today. In the New Orleans and Company Hour, we're going to visit with Charlotte Voisey, Executive Director of the Tales of Cocktail Foundation. They will be back on track July 20th through the 25th at the Ritz-Carlton. This has really taken off, this convention, Tales of the Cocktail. We'll talk about all of the new offerings that they have, the impact that they've made in the past, and what they hope to do in the future. Michael Heck joins us with his segment, President and CEO of G&O Inc. We'll have a number of issues that we'll talk about. And he brings with him Knox Ross, the chair of the Southern Rail Commission, and he'll talk about the return of Amtrak service between New Orleans and Mobile. You know, recent articles talking about how much more popular the Gulf Coast small cities have been. I can tell you, I was in Waveland for July 4th weekend. Unbelievable. Packed to the gills. The fireworks displays were absolutely incredible. Had an opportunity to go to a couple of restaurants, really enjoyed it, and looked around and knew probably about half the people in the restaurants. All from New Orleans of the North Shore. It was amazing. Had a good time, though, and thank our hosts that had us out there. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. Heather Hodges will join us at 10:30, Director of Institutional Advancement, the Historic New Orleans Collection. Well, they just purchased 416 Charter Street. That was the old K. Paul's Kitchen. And they actually have the building next door. They are working really hard to make a difference in the French Quarter. We'll talk about all of the assets that they have, all of what they're bringing as an attraction for tourists to come to the French Quarter. And we'll also spend a little time about their vision and their future of the French Quarter and what they believe, what the path that we should be taking. And along those lines, congratulations to New Orleans, right? Because they once again have landed at the top of an acclaimed travel destination list. Travel and Leisure has voted New Orleans as the second best travel spot in the U.S. for 2025. I think that's one of the highest rankings that they've had. Santa Fe actually finished number one, knocking Charleston out of that spot, who held that spot for 12 years, and the Crescent City earned their high marks from voters specifically for its unique and massive food scene. One reader put it, some of the best food ever is in New Orleans. Can't disagree. I had the best crepe of my life in a local spot owned and run by one person. It's these little nuances that we truly excel at for sure. New Orleans also has a one-of-a-kind culture. Architecture earned the city a score of 87, just 1 point behind the number one finisher, Santa Fe. In 2024, the city actually ranked as the fifth best city. So the top 15 cities go this way. At number one, Santa Fe. Number two, New Orleans. Number three, Charleston. Number four, Savannah, Georgia. Number five, Alexandria, Virginia. Number six, Honolulu, Hawaii. Number seven, Greenville, South Carolina. Number eight, New York. Number nine, Asheville, North Carolina. Number 10, Chicago. Number 11, Taos, New Mexico. Number 12, San Antonio. Number 13, Nashville. Number 14, Boston. And number 15, Colorado. All the more reason that, in fact, Tommy Tucker just had Jane Cooper on from the French Quarter Management District about what's going on with the French Quarter Board. Going to go out to bids for a trash hauler. All of this plays into this, right? And that's why it's important that we have to click on all cylinders. Apply any cliche you want to it. These are the things that people remember. Human nature is the first impression is the lasting impression. From the moment they land in the airport, from the moment that they drive through Jefferson Parish, go under the railroad track, hit the city of New Orleans, get off, head towards their hotel, whether that be uptown, downtown, in the warehouse district, in the French Quarter, it doesn't matter where. We have to pretty ourselves up in order to make sure that we're influencing, to the best of our ability, the first impression. Because that's going to be the lasting impression. I can tell you I just went through this process in Croatia. Drove from the airport to Dubrovnik, about a 20-mile trek. We get to the hotel. We're greeted. We move our stuff into the hotel, no problems, no resistance, everything's going well. By the time we sit down, have our first little cocktail, what is the first conversation we have? How clean the airport was, how friendly they were, how quick we made it through immigration, how quickly we were able to get our transportation. We saw not a single piece of garbage in the 20-mile trek and the reception at the hotel. And you know what? The momentum built from there. And I guarantee you, of the 36 people that we had on our trip that were there, I would venture to say that probably everybody on that trip would grade that trip as an A+. Because that country continued to build on that momentum, that first impression. It was absolutely incredible. You know it. Folks that are well-traveled, you experience it. You're seeing it all the time. You've heard me talk briefly about this trip. I'm not that well-traveled to Europe. I have been to France, Italy, and now Croatia. But, you know, of those three, Croatia is by far the cleanest. Not even close. Not even close. No panhandlers. No homeless people. No crime. It's a beautiful thing. Really is. And when you leave, you have this desire to go back. Well, that's the mindset and the culture that we have to develop. We're wedded to the tourism industry, and the only way that we're going to be able to grow and bring and lure other industries here is to excel at this one. Not 3 days out of the week, not 4 days out of the week, 24/7, because you're constantly tested, because that's the downside and the upside to tourism. They're always here. So hiccups, albeit may happen, they have to be very short-lived. Remediation has to come in a very quick fashion. And you got to be having that best foot forward all the time, because you don't want to miss the opportunity to influence someone else's what? You got it. First impression. Because you're going through this process over and over and over again. You can't ever let your guard down. It's a hard thing. But it comes from leadership. It comes from leadership, not only within the restaurant industry, the hospitality industry, hotel industry, tourism industry, but government. Collectively and collaboratively together on the same sheet of music, understanding the importance of this. And we have a crown jewel. We have something that no one else has in the country. No one. Nada. Zero. We have the French Quarter that sits on the mighty Mississippi River. We have a history. We have cultural influences from multiple nations' flags that flew over this piece of geography for a whole host of strategic reasons historically that no one else has. We have a culture here embedded that has multiple languages that flourished here, right? Going back historically, that most other places don't have. We are part of history in certain ways that most other places don't have. We're going to get a chance to talk with Heather Hodges a little bit about this as it relates to this jewel, the French Quarter. But it's that first impression that we're trying to influence each and every day. New wallets, new people coming to our city. Man, if you blow them away right away, you know what they end up doing? They feel good. They want to spend their money here. They want to leave more of their money here. And we want to help facilitate that feeling to leave more of their money here. They want to have that good time. And if they're not worrying about distractions and they can just focus on having fun, guess who wins? They win and we win. Pretty simple calculation. It's not rocket science. But it's doing the little things well each and every day. And it takes all of us working together to do it. And when we have a vendor that produces and has produced and has been tried and tested for years, why would we try to run that vendor up the street? Oh, look, you're going to have political differences. Who cares? You're going to have personal conflicts. Who cares? You're not going to be on the same sheet of music all the time. Who cares? You have to keep your eye on the ball of what really matters. If they're doing what they're supposed to do for the right price, that's all that matters. If you're upset with somebody because they didn't write you a big enough check, or they weren't with you, or they don't particularly like you personally, who cares? I've lived my whole life in public life without people hating me, and they don't even know me. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I go about doing what I can do in the best way that I know how to influence the organization, whether that was JPSO or WWL. It doesn't matter. Pointing out the obvious. Maybe guilty of being part of the crucifixion of the mayor. I don't care that she doesn't like it. Because the fact of the matter is, she's dropped the ball. She's had every opportunity to influence the first impression of all of the visitors to this city each and every day, and she doesn't do it. We've had to have sideshows, freak shows, totally let down. We've had situations where we've hired incompetent people that have no experience set in what she hired these individuals for in order to conduct some kind of science project based on some ideology that made no sense. Everybody knew it was going to fail. It did. She didn't care. So the rest of everyone else that did, we moved forward two steps, and the mayor then did her tap dance two-step, and we ended up two steps back. You don't get these recognitions by accident. Thankfully, we have a forward-leaning hospitality, restaurant industry, you know, and tourism industry representatives, Walt Leger and his organization with New Orleans and Company, and, you know, those folks over there are working hard every day trying to sell this city, put our best foot forward. understanding we have challenges, you know, and trying to put lipstick on pigs that we don't need, right? Need to minimize the pigs and minimize the lipstick purchases and moving forward. And when you do that enough, you get recognition. And thankfully, maybe when they were down here, we were on our best. And we need to make sure that we're on our best all the time. Just wanted to point out a couple of things, and you know, we'll talk later on in around 12:30 about the big beautiful bill. And Representative Steve Scalise was on with Scoot yesterday in the 3 o'clock hour, and they talked a little bit about this Medicaid reform and, you know, the misinformation that's out there as it relates to that and other issues there. It's not a perfect bill. Nobody's ever said it's a perfect bill. Donald Trump called it the big, beautiful bill because it could have come in the shape of about 7 to 11 bills as opposed to one. And he wanted to get this over with quick, fast, and coordinate all of that into one bill. I'm not so certain that I like that. I'm very much an advocate to vote on one issue, one bill, up, down. That way I have a clear understanding where everyone stands on these issues, and there's no side issues that they get to hide under and blame for their vote one way or the other. I find it very confusing, especially for the electorate, because we're not spending all day, all of our time reading about what's going on in Congress. Because of my job here, I probably read more about it than most, and the folks in the think tanks around the country, they do it more than I, and those that are up there trying to influence votes are doing it the most, and they probably do it more than the Congress members themselves, right? But, you know, and that's why the easier they could make it for us to follow, the better off it would be. But we'll talk a little bit about that in the back half of the 12 o'clock hour. But what I do want to point out is that here we are, we're about to go down this path again. We're beginning to hear some frustration from Democrat Congress folks that are upset that they just can't show up at immigration facilities and walk in and conduct an audit or a review or whatever they think they have the right to do, which they don't. And they're being turned away because they're not going through the proper channels. They're not making the proper requests. It's almost as if they think that they're going to pull off a surprise visit. And of course, they have the cameras with them. It's all about the theatrics and something that's going to be very performative, you know, to try and catch something. And then they want to try and force an issue and a conflict with these officials and play these silly ass child games on and on. So now that they've been shut out, they're frustrated. They're trying to figure out their next plan of attack. And they've actually come out and said, we are receiving a lot of pressure from our base that are now demanding violence in response to Trump. These House Democrats, as I said, they're upset. They can't get into these ICE facilities, shoot out these videos, YouTube videos, like as though they're really doing something, right? So, of course, they fall back on something that they did so well during the Summer of Love. Even now, some liberal individual professor at the University of Houston wants to rename that school as is it University of Houston? Let me check that out again because I don't want to go down that path if it's not Houston. I'm not convinced that it is. But anyway, you're now focusing on defunding ICE. And that the best way maybe for them to get their message across is through the appropriation process and do that. So here we are again. We're right back at the defunding mentality and defunding ICE and holding up. Bill will be out there. So get ready because that's the dialogue that you're going to see. So it is. It is a professor at the University of Houston wants to rename that university is the University of George Floyd. George Floyd University. Really. We are now going off the rails here. And so we'll abolish ICE. We'll rename universities, after George Floyd, and all will be better. They're also very upset about ICE officers wearing masks. Well, the reason they are, and the reason they're not wearing name tags, is that they're doxing all of their family members and harassing their family members, finding out where these officers live, showing up at their house, and creating conflict around the country. So now, a lot of the ICE officers are having to shield their identity because they want to play that silly game and be disruptive in that fashion as well, and wreak havoc for these officers just doing their jobs of their families. And these officers are having to worry about the safety and welfare of their families while they're doing their jobs, right? And so now they've allowed them to wear masks, and they don't have markings on their uniforms and things of that nature. And now they're all upset about that, but they're not upset at all that the family members of these law enforcement officers are being scared to death. They're being harassed. They're being followed. It just doesn't make any sense at all. But get ready, because I suspect by the end of the summer that this is going to get even worse. The idiocracy that's on the streets of our country right now, second to none. People have no emotional intelligence. They're not able to manage their own emotions. They know what the weak points are of others. They're pressing it because they want to create conflict. And in creating conflict, they get all of their theatrics on the media. And, you know, the stories get told. And they really believe that this is going to help their cause. So just be aware that this is what's going on. This is the next stage of this aggression towards Homeland Security, folks. And as more and more people are rounded up and get arrested, this is exactly what we're going to hear. 11 people arrested the other day as they're taking shots at officers with the Department of Homeland Security at a detention facility. All young folks, not sure what they're thinking. They recovered a lot of books about anarchy and this and that and everything else. So we kind of know where their mindset is. And we are now again off and running. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Heather Hodges, Director of Institutional Advancement with the Historic New Orleans Collection. Heather, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning from the beautiful French Quarter.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. Well, we just recently heard that you guys purchased the old Cape Hall at 416 Charter Street, and that you guys own some buildings next door, and y'all are going to be embarking upon some wonderful things there to advance and enlarge opportunities to reveal the New Orleans story to our visitors. So tell us about it.
Some of your listeners may have seen the article which ran in the Times-Picayune this weekend that shared some information about the work that we've done to bring back to life the old Cape Hall's building, which is at 416-418 Charter Street next to our Williams Research Center. We acquired that building in 2023 and have spent the last 2 years making significant capital investments in it so that we can use it to become a new home for some of our staff as we do some rehabilitations to some other properties we own in the French Quarter. At this point, we have 14 historic buildings in the French Quarter.
If you would, Heather, for the benefit of the listening audience, could you kind of tell us about the mission and the vision of the Historic New Orleans Collection?
The Historic New Orleans Collection has been in existence since the 1960s. At this point, we have multiple roles that we play in the community. In the first instance, we are an archive and home to the largest collection of historic materials relating to the history of the city of New Orleans. Drawing on that collection, we also mount museum exhibitions, primarily from our Museum Exhibition Center, which is located at 520 Royal Street. We are also a publishing house, and we do a tremendous amount of educational work in the form of field trips and engaging with schools. So we have many missions. The primary one is to steward the history of the city of New Orleans and to use those collections to educate both community members and visitors about our city.
I was in my monologue congratulating everyone that participates in the city with the most recent Travel and Leisure's recognition, ranking the city as the second best travel spot in the U.S. for 2025. You guys spend a lot of time talking about the offerings that need to be made in this special place, the jewel that we call the French Quarter. And I made the observation, this is a place that nobody else has in this country. They don't have anything even close, right? From a historical perspective, from what exists, existed then and what exists now. If you would, for us, tell us about your thoughts about how important this relatively small piece of geography is to the future of the city of New Orleans.
It's incredibly important when you think about tourism and how important it is to the state and to the city of New Orleans, and you're talking about on the scale of 19 million people a year visiting New Orleans. We know the vast majority of them are also going to come to the French Quarter. It's an integral part of the visitor experience. It's an iconic destination. You say New Orleans to anybody in the world, and you spark their curiosity, and probably a few minutes later they tell you that they're planning a visit. It's such a unique cultural landscape. And you're right, it exists nowhere else in the world. And so it is very precious. And I think when you think about the future of tourism and cultural tourism in Louisiana and New Orleans in particular, the French Quarter is critical to any planning that needs to be done about how we want to sustain the levels of tourism that we're seeing and hopefully grow it.
What do you see, and I know one of the members of your organization, I think maybe the executive director, wrote an opinion piece back in March of 2025 about the investment in the French Quarter, you know, the successes that we've had recently with Super Bowl and things of that nature. What do you see as maybe some of the biggest challenges that we have moving forward?
The biggest challenges we have with respect to the French Quarter?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we need to have a sustained conversation about the investments that need to be maintained made to intentionally activate the cultural heritage of the French Quarter. And those investments revolve around everything from thinking about the significant enhancement of our museum facilities, whether or not we need restrictions on vehicular traffic for improved pedestrian safety. All of these decisions have to be made in the context of how do we maintain the authenticity of the French Quarter. But we're aware that there are certain sort of issues that need to be collectively addressed to facilitate visitors coming into the French Quarter.
Yeah. Do you see that are we straying? Do you see with leadership not losing focus, not being directed, not paying attention? You know, I made the observation in my monologue this morning, Heather, that, you know, the first impression is a lasting impression, and that's human nature. And, you know, one of the difficulties of tourism is you have a lot of bodies coming in at different times, 24/7, right, 7 days a week. And all of these folks are a lot of times first impression folks. And you got to be on your game all the time. And you can't afford to have the slip-ups because you want to start creating the momentum of that visit from the very first moment they step off the airplane at Louis Armstrong International Airport. And it's incredibly important. But there are a lot of times I feel like, you know, the tourism industry gets it, the restaurant industry, hotels, you guys, but those in government don't. And, you know, we're battling a number of different issues for too long, not getting things resolved. You know, street lights, street signs, sidewalks, all gone, you know, amok in many respects, and we keep missing these opportunities.
And that, I think, is one of the reasons why we've tried to be more proactive in helping to frame conversations about the types of major investments that need to be made, particularly with respect to the French Quarter. When you think about the intentional activation of cultural heritage to support tourism, you know, related issues relating to movement, access, and accessibility of people through the French Quarter, that is a problem that's going to require a lot of stakeholders to get engaged, and that includes our local government and elected officials. And so we've tried to be intentional in making the case for why investments need to be made to sustain cultural heritage tourism and what those kinds of investments could be.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting, and you don't have to opine on this if you don't want. I mean, here we are. We're wrapped up in a 6 or 8 month, you know, argument, debate, I don't know what you want to call it, over who the trash contractor is going to be. I mean, it's just, you know, it's kind of like, and we're not even sure where it's going to be in the near future. And it's these things that I think if I was a business owner in the French Quarter, I would think that I would just be totally beside myself and completely frustrated. You know, it's hard enough to conduct business down there on a good day. But to have all of these other things, it just would make it so much easier if we got our act together. It just seems like a waste, quite frankly.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we're trying to frame these conversations and engage more stakeholders, because French Quarter business owners, tourists, a lot of people have a stake in the future of the French Quarter, and that sort of day-to-day quality of life issues, that's an important part of the collection of challenges that we need to address. And so I think what we would like to see is more people coming to the table to think about what the future of the French Quarter looks like and what are those specific decisions that need to be made in the next 5 to 10 years to ensure that the French Quarter remains the destination that we want it to be.
Yeah, you know, my desire is that when they leave the city, they remember your exhibit, right? They remember your story that y'all have told, and that what they don't remember, or that they remember that is very clean, but, you know, and also that the sidewalks were in place, and we didn't have big holes, and we didn't have potholes, and we had drains that actually drained the water. Because the stories that I hear, it's a shame. They talk about how great all of that stuff is, but what sticks with them are these minor inconveniences. You know, they tripped in a hole on a sidewalk and turned their ankle, or, you know, they had to walk around an entire block because the drain there wasn't draining the water because of the previous rain. And these are the simple things that we talk about. You know, it would just be great if they said, you know, that historic New Orleans collection is just unbelievable. You don't see that in other cities. You really don't.
and we agree. And so I mentioned earlier some of the investments in strategic planning that we think need to be undertaken to address some of those issues, and definitely the challenges of sidewalk obstructions, trash, sidewalk paving. Those are concerns, but we also have concerns about, you know, how forward-thinking are we being about educating people about how to access the French Quarter. Could we develop Armstrong Park as a French Quarter access to our departure point? What about the riverfront? How do we deal with concerns we have from people about challenges around parking? And so those are all, I agree, those are all very specific sorts of challenges that we need to address because, you know, in the aggregate, they can impact negatively the visitor or the community member's experience. And so we are in disagreement. There are some specific challenges that need to be collectively addressed.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for all that your group does, the Historic New Orleans Collection. I knew y'all had been around a long time. I did not know it went all the way back to the 60s. So you learn something new every day. And keep up the great work and the preservation that you do and a lot of the other issues that y'all have embarked on as well. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And if we could, we'd like to remind people that our History Museum is free of admission and open 6 days a week, and we have some tremendous exhibitions on view right now, one on the history of our Vietnamese communities, another on the civil rights movement in New Orleans. And so this is an excellent time. We encourage folks in the community that want to know more about our work or visit our museum to come and see us this summer. And again, it's free admission.
And the website they would go to?
It is hnoc.org. And our museum is located at 520 Royal Street.
All righty, hnoc.org. Thank you so much. Heather Hodges, Director of Institutional Advancement, the Historic New Orleans Collection. Have a great week.
Thank you.
We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. All right, folks. In the 12 o'clock hour, we are going to visit with Charlotte Voisey, Executive Director of the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation. That'll be going on in the city July 20th through the 25th. It's headquartered at the Ritz-Carlton. It has really become incredibly popular, not only nationally, but internationally. A lot of folks will be coming to the city in order to enjoy themselves. They have a lot of activities that they put on, so you want to definitely check out their website. And we're going to talk with Charlotte about that at 12. And after the top of the hour news break, we will join Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc., and he brings with him Knox Ross, the chair of the Southern Rail Commission. And we'll talk about the return of Amtrak between New Orleans and Mobile. So stay with us. We'll be right back, folks. This is Newell on WWL.